Hello, this is Chris with the Champaign News Gazette for Monday, March 12th. We'll begin today's reading on the front page. Gunfire kills one, injures three others. Police seek more details and witnesses from Champaign. Police are seeking the public's help in solving a shooting that killed one man and injured three others early Sunday in North Champaign. Champaign County Coroner Dwayne Northrup said that Montrez Vonner, 34, of Champaign, died just before 2 a.m. at Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana, a victim of multiple gunshot wounds. The fatal shooting is Champaign's second of 2018. Police continue to look for Cornelius Friedman, 39, of Carbondale, for the first-degree murder of Michael White, 26, of Chicago. White was gunned down about 1 p.m. Wednesday near the corner of Bloomington Road and Sunset Drive. The early morning shooting Sunday happened in the 700 block of North Hickory Street near the intersection with Vine Street, said Champaign Police Detective Nate Rath. The location is just south of the American Legion Post, a popular club located a block east of Neal Street. Rath said police were sent there at 1:22 a.m. because multiple shots had been fired. He declined to say if police believed there was more than one shooter. He was not certain if Mr. Vonner was the intended target. What they do know is that Mr. Vonner was killed and two women from Rantoul, ages 18 and 23, and a 23-year-old Champaign man were also shot. Their injuries were described as not life-threatening. Rath had no update on their conditions. There was at least a small crowd out there. We need help. We're slowly churning things up. It would go quicker if people out there would start saying what they saw. They were all out at the intersection of Hickory and Vine. One of the injured might have been in a vehicle. Preliminary information is that people in the area heard a verbal argument just before the shots started flying. Mr. Vonner's death comes on the heels of a CU Fresh Start's latest call-in last week of identified violent offenders. It's the third attempt by program organizers to get certain young men to put guns down in exchange for receiving services to help them, and hopefully the community. Only 5 of 20 men from the previous call-ins were still working on self-improvement. Northrup has scheduled an autopsy for this afternoon in Urbana. Anyone who has information or who was in the area is asked to contact Champaign Police at 217-351-4545. Also on the front page, after the Florida school shooting, their voices. We shouldn't be afraid to come to school because of guns. To Andrea Allen, the question has changed. He no longer wonders if there will be another school shooting, or if it will be here, elsewhere, or even at his own campus, Urbana High School. Now he just wonders when. The fact that the most recent mass school shooting, which left 17 people dead, occurred at a school more than 1,200 miles away, in Parkland, Florida, is no source of comfort to the UHS senior and other students who find it too easy to picture their own school as the next target, their own friends, classmates, and teachers as the next to fall. Frustrated by the latest school tragedy and congressional inaction regarding gun laws, some local middle and high school students plan to join a national walkout Wednesday as an act of protest. What that will look like depends on the school. The general idea, though, is that students will leave their buildings around 10 a.m. and protest peacefully nearby until 10:17 a.m., 1 minute for each victim. What will also differ by school is how administrators choose to handle a potentially large number of students exiting the building at once. As schools across the country grapple with the question, some have been criticized for their decisions, including one Texas superintendent who said, any participating students would face 3-day suspensions. Local administrators who spoke with the News Gazette, however, said they do not plan to suspend students who protest peacefully, although some cannot explicitly endorse leaving school during class time. We actually have taken a proactive approach, said Rantoul Township High School Principal Todd Wilson. Last week I sent an email to our students letting them know we are aware this would take place, and we would rather partner with them in doing it. Basically, the guidance that I've given the students is that if it's done properly, we're going to respect what they do. In Urbana, Superintendent Don Owen informed students in a letter that those who participate peacefully will not face any consequences as long as they fit school officials' definition of peaceful. A lot of what happens depends on how you choose to conduct yourself, UHS Assistant Principal Aaron Ludwig said. It would be individualized to the behavior a student exhibits. In Champaign, Central High School Principal Joe Williams wrote that students who leave class to participate will be marked as having an unexcused absence, but the punishment that accompanies that won't be enforced. At Central, when students are unexcused absent, they are placed on the social probation. This does not apply to this week's protest because the following week is spring break, and therefore there isn't a consequence. Centennial Principal Brian Riegler said the policy will be the same at his high school. The efforts to decide how protests will transpire have been student-led, with conversations occurring between teachers and administrators as necessary. Allen, one of the organizers at UHS, said students there primarily wanted to honor the Parkland victims, so they plan to stand in silence for the 17 minutes. It's supposed to honor the people killed in Florida, and we want to do that justice. There is definitely a huge political underlining that's cool, but we want to do our best to honor who is killed. Urbana students plan to walk to the Lincoln statue at Carl Park, intentionally standing in a place where the public could see or even join them. We don't just want to be Urbana High School, we want to be Urbana. If Centennial students get clearance, senior Velna Green said they'll walk to the track and perform two chants, as well as make a call-to-action speech. Basically, it's telling students that the way to get change is to register to vote. It also gives us a voice to say that this is our education, and we shouldn't be afraid to come to school because of guns. And then we will have a moment of silence. We will only be outside 17 minutes to honor that. Because Wednesday's walkouts could be construed as political events, state law prevents teachers from joining students, which makes supervision tricky for local administrations. Champaign's Unit 4 informed parents of this in correspondence sent to families in the middle and high schools. We recognize that some staff, families, and members of our community have expressed support for demonstrations. However, under Illinois law, school employees are prohibited from engaging in political activities while at work or on duty. As Unit 4 employees and staff, participating in a student walkout would violate this prohibition. Accordingly, staff are being asked to fulfill assignments for supervising students and cannot participate in the walkouts. A version of that letter sent to Central High School families included a note stating that there would be a similar event held after school Wednesday at 3:45. Green remains hopeful student voices are heard. I feel like a lot of times community members just go, they're just kids, they don't know about the real world. We do live in the real world. I really want people to know that we aren't just kids making noise. We really do want to see a change. We're not just acting out. House watching, with frats nationwide under the microscope, Illinois dealing with its own set of infractions. 2 years ago, University of Illinois officials were called to investigate a fraternity hazing practice straight out of Guantanamo Bay. For being late to a sleepover at the Delta Sigma Phi house, two new members were allegedly waterboarded. In 2014, the U of I's Office of Student Conflict Resolution received reports that another campus frat, in an effort to boost morale, hosted stripper night, which involved bringing in adult entertainers from Chicago to put on a show with sex toys for new members. Those were among the most serious of the 28 complaints leveled in the past 5 years against the U of I campus's 42 sanctioned men's houses that led to disciplinary action by the university, according to documents obtained by the News Gazette via Freedom of Information Act inquests. While complaints are handled by the OSCR, which falls under the Dean of Students, the fraternities are governed by the Intra-Fraternity Council, a student-led organization. Ultimately, judicial boards made up largely of U of I students determine disciplinary actions for houses. The IFC itself is run by a 9-seat executive board of students. The IFC's website touts it standing as the largest Greek life community in the world, and all the good its 3,700 members do, from its GPA better than the average for 14 straight years to its mission statement, the development of fraternity members through intellectual, social leadership, and humanitarian pursuits. But there's a darker side, too, one that in recent years has led to charges of hazing, drug use, homophobia, and harsh initiation tactics. Some of the same issues that prompted one of Illinois' Big Ten peers, Ohio State, to suspend all male fraternities in November. 9 months earlier, another Big Ten campus, Penn State, was rocked by the death of Beta Theta Phi pledge, Timothy Piazza. Security camera footage showed he had been served at least 18 drinks in over 1 hour and 22 minutes. Authorities said in announcing charges against 26 fraternity members for crimes that range from providing alcohol to minors to involuntary manslaughter. That case and others like it across the country, at Florida State, LSU, and Texas State in 2017, at 14 other colleges, including Northern Illinois, earlier this decade, has sparked calls for rethinking the idea of Greek life on campus. Franklin, Indiana College professor Hank Neuer, a leading expert on hazing prevention, wonders when enough will be enough. There are some fraternities that definitely need to be axed, said Neuer, author of 2018's Hazing, Destroying Young Lives, one of five books he's written on the topic. And as the deaths continue, there are demands for changes. Should fraternities exist at all? These are the things that we're seeing right now. The allegations came as no surprise to Raneem Sheldon, president of the student body at the U of I. Having experienced Greek life herself, she rushed Delta Zeta as a freshman. She said she's become somewhat desensitized to tales of hazing and the like. It's so normal to hear these kinds of stories. People would rather deal with the hazing because it's temporary rather than tattletale and lose out on the lifelong friendships. Ramshin left Delta Zeta because of what she described as racial tensions. Since then, sorority members took part in workshops that helped mitigate some of those issues, but generally speaking, Greek life at the U of I lacks diversity. She likened Greek life's traditionalist fixations to those of Chief Illini WEC supporters on campus. Tradition, she said, shouldn't be an excuse for doing anything, and she blames the national fraternity and sorority organizations for fostering that sense of tradition. Nationals are usually older, elitist people who were really into their fraternity, so changing it from the top down is difficult. And on top of that, people aren't speaking up about stuff like this. In a corner of Champaign Police Sergeant Joe Ketchum's office are three boxes, filled to the brim with fake IDs he's collected over the years. During his time as a street cop, Ketchum said he remembers seeing similar boxes inside fraternity houses, available to underage members who might need a hand convincing a bouncer or liquor store clerk they were of age. Ketchum also serves on CPD's alcohol enforcement detail and said there's a long-standing culture on campus of trying to outwit the cops, particularly when it comes to alcohol. Often it's the police who end up tipping off the university about allegations of hazing. They eventually make their way across the desk of Justin Brown, director of the Office for Student Conflict Resolution, which is responsible for administering student discipline on campus. Many times the tips originate via something in the fine print of a police report or an anonymous Crime Stoppers message. They tend to be light on details. If names are included, Brown said, he and his team jump to action and conduct as many interviews as they can. When they uncover any evidence of a code violation, they recommend a formal hearing by the Board of Fraternity Affairs, which is made up of 6 students, 3 faculty staff, 3 alumni, and 2 ex officio members, the Dean of Students and Assistant Dean of Students for Greek Affairs. Less serious cases are referred to the other main disciplinary bodies to handle fraternity discipline, the Interfraternity Council Judicial Board. Serious ones, like extreme hazing practices, can lead the Board of Fraternity Affairs to issue any of five disciplinary actions against a house, an official university reprimand, a university censure, conduct probation, suspension, or revocation. These often come with other sanctions meant to reform the organization before their status is reinstated. Hazing is an issue for organizations across campus, and as an IFC community, we are committed to addressing it in all forms. The university, IFC, and all fraternities have strong anti-hazing policies, and we work with the university and national fraternities to quickly respond to any allegation of hazing. Of the 28 complaints brought against U of I fraternities in the past 5 years, only one was a torture practice condemned by the Geneva Convention. In late October 2016, the OSCR began investigating allegations that two members of the U of I's Delta Sigma Phi chapter were subjected to waterboarding for being late to an event. The OSCR contacted both victims, but only one responded. He said new members were instructed to attend a sleepover event at 11 p.m. October 22nd. Due to communication issues, he and the other alleged victim didn't make it to where they were supposed to be until between midnight or 1 a.m. When Brown asked what happened next, the victim said he didn't want to answer. After Brown described how waterboarding works, a person experiences the sensation of drowning, the student said that happened to him for about 3 seconds. When he removed the cloth from his face, the student said he didn't recognize who'd poured the water. Among the 8 others interviewed by Brown, one new member described being shocked and a little scared that anyone would do that. An active member of the fraternity, who said he didn't know what happened until later, thought it was a joke at the time, adding, "If we're going to go overboard and do something dumb, I didn't think it would be that dumb." Other active members described it differently. One said he didn't agree it was actual waterboarding, but admitted what went on qualified as hazing. Another said the victims were asked if they were okay. The sleepover continued, and house leaders were outraged when they learned what happened. The OSCR's investigation also found that pledge points were accumulated by making new members clean the chapter house, give rides to active members, and purchase food for active members. In addition to chapter leadership taking disciplinary action against new member educators, the university issued Delta Sigma Phi what's called a revocation held in abeyance. In a letter to the chapter, the university wrote, "This means that although revocation would be an appropriate sanction, your organization's relationship with the U of I will not be terminated at this time. Conditional to full reinstatement when the 1-year penalty expired on December 8, 2017, the chapter was required to create a new member bill of rights and hold accountability and standards training, among other things." An OSCR investigation into the Delta Chi fraternity found the chapter was involved in inappropriate new member education practices. Among them, calisthenics, sleep deprivation, confining members to a room where loud music was playing on repeat for extended periods of time, shouting profanity, racial slurs, and homophobic slurs at new members, forced alcohol consumption, forced theft in the context of a scavenger hunt, and stewing, a practice in which members filled a bucket with disgusting liquids, including bodily waste, and threw it at new members. One student interviewed by the OSCR in 2014 reported that he was hazed during his first semester and that the practice continued at Delta Chi throughout his time as a member. In order to become an associate member during Delta Chi's initiation week, the student said he and fellow pledges were made to stand in a bathroom for over 2 hours with pillowcases on their heads. Also, he alleged he wasn't allowed to sleep for more than an hour each night during pledge week and ate canned chili and or canned tuna along with a piece of bread during meals and drank from a pot of water that was passed around. Each day also involved pledges performing many push-ups. If one did poorly, the entire group was punished with additional push-ups. The sessions became more rigorous over time. At the end of the 5-day initiation week, the student and fellow pledges were kept in a room for 8 to 12 hours at a time, with the same song playing very loudly on repeat. Once they were let out, students were marched into a room containing lit candles, where active members said absurd, silly things to the pledges. Then it was back to the room for 10 more hours of a different loud song playing. The student also described stripper night, which involved paid Chicago adult entertainers performing at the house. Another student who met with Ashley Dye, dean of the Office of Fraternity and Sorority Affairs, said he also experienced hazing as a new member. He described scavenger hunts in which new members were expected to shoplift and collect dead animals. Dye did not respond to multiple interview requests by the News Gazette. The second student said the push-up sessions, which lasted even to the point that some new members became sick from exhaustion, included active members blowing smoke at them, throwing beer cans at them, slapping them, and holding their faces down. Active members would also shout profanities, including racial and homophobic slurs at new members. The lengthy list of violations led the chapter to receive 6 sanctions and a revocation in abeyance for more than 2 years, from August 27, 2014 to September 15, 2016. To be reinstated by the university, the stipulations included hiring a house director and not hosting any event with alcohol for a full school year. Delta Chi's probation is due to end on September 15, 2018. Alcohol violations were the primary reason for disciplinary action against the U of I's 42 IFC fraternities between April 9, 2013 and November 28, 2017. Half of them were hit at least once. The most recent came on October 20, 2017, when Phi Epsilon hosted an unregistered social event with alcohol present, which led to a university censure. That event, a minor became intoxicated to the point of incapacitation. Records suggest that some chapter members discouraged a 9/11 call. Eventually, someone placed a call over the protest of others. Multiple fraternities also were cited for violations related to drugs. The highest profile case involved Lambda Chi Alpha, where a 2013 bus led to a membership purge and multiple criminal charges. The candy shop, as that member-run part of the fraternity was known, was a prime location to buy ecstasy, cocaine, Adderall, cannabis, and LSD. 7 of its members were criminally charged. 1 member's case was dismissed. 5 others received community-based sentences for guilty pleas to various charges. The 7th, Michael Genovese, was sentenced to 2 years probation after pleading guilty to possession with intent to deliver a controlled substance, a Class 1 felony. In exchange, other more serious charges alleging he had between 15 and 100 grams of ecstasy and LSD were dismissed. To achieve an outcome like that, police need to be heavily involved. Brown said investigations his office conducts are time-consuming and resource-draining. We've been able to manage and continue to manage, but that's the source of my dread, at least. For many spot checks of fraternities, Brown said his office relies on campus grapevine. Ideally, officials say the outcome goes like Sigma Alpha Epsilon's did following alleged hazing in 2013 and 2014. The university placed the fraternity on suspension held in abeyance from 2013 to early 2015, and the National Sigma Alpha Epsilon office fined the U of I chapter $50 per student, enough to cover the $5,000 cost of a hazing workshop. After an evaluation of its members, some were expelled by the fraternity, said current Sigma Alpha Epsilon chapter president Daniel Arcus. The national office also insisted a live-in advisor be hired for the house, a step more frats are taking to preserve order. He keeps things under control. If we were to have a party that gets out of hand, he knows how to handle that, as do we. The house also no longer hosts registered events with booze, a mandate from the national fraternity in the wake of alcohol abuse at chapters across the country. and a letter to the editor. Support for Salon House humbling. I appreciate everyone who has left supportive and encouraging comments about my purchase of the Salon House. I'm a little overcome and humbled by the number of people who have been kind enough to wish me well. Really, though, praise must go not to me, but to PACA, Preservation and Conservation Association, and the dozens of people who put in the hard work to make the House of Champaign Landmark, get it on the Federal Register of Historic Places, and apply for and successfully receive the two State of Illinois grants that paid for all the work that has been put into stabilizing the structure. Had it not been for them, the house would not be here today. Nevertheless, it means an awful lot to me to feel such goodwill from my adopted hometown. I hope I will not disappoint and that my efforts will go some way to making our community truly proud that this beautiful and elegant property has been declared a Champaign Landmark. Chris Knight, Champaign. Arming teacher story was biased. This is in response to Jeff DeLizio's biased article about arming teachers in schools. First, to the author himself, arming teachers in schools is hardly a knee-jerk reaction. What has been done to prevent school shootings or at least minimize their destruction up to now? Hardly anything. This is simply one idea of several that hasn't been given a fair chance. Most progressives live off ideas that are untested and yet are usually hailed as some great hope because the idea came from a leftist PhD. And second, in response to Mr. Behrens, the social studies teacher, his need for his views about the life or death safety of his students to line up with his students is foolish. He, along with all other teachers and administrators, are supposed to be the adult thinkers in this situation. This is not a research experiment. It's not a matter of what a bunch of wet-behind-the-ears students feel about the issue. It's a matter of grown-up people making tough choices to save lives. Gary Fitt. And from Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, sorority banned after December game. A Pennsylvania university has kicked a sorority off campus due to what officials are calling a reprehensible scavenger hunt that involved drugs, alcohol, and sexual activity. Alpha Chi Omega's Theta Chi chapter lost its recognition by Lehigh University for 2 years and will be banned from campus through May 2020. The Lehigh Greek Community blog published by the university says the sorority hosted a December scavenger hunt in which participants were given a list of tasks that involved the use of drugs and alcohol, sexual activity, and other activities that violate the Bethlehem school's policy. The sorority was suspended, pending an investigation by a disciplinary committee that called the activity reprehensible. Alpha Chi Omega can appeal. The national organization conducted an investigation resulting in probation and individual punishments. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Champaign News Gazette for Monday, March 12th. Please stay tuned.